and welcome to pod 39 of the official Palace pod. I'm Chris Grierson from Palace TV, which you can watch on the official Palace app, on YouTube, on eagles.cpfc.co.uk and on all the social media channels. So on pod 39, we have got Roy Hodgson's press conference in the build-up to the game against Leicester City. We speak to two Palace women players, Kira Watling and Jordan Butler, about the season so far. We hear from Wilfried Zaha. But first of all, we have Chairman Steve Parish. There was a big announcement this week about the proposed designs for the new academy site, subject to planning permission being granted by Bromley Council. This week, he was speaking to local residents because he wanted to run it by them first. And I caught up with him just after he did a presentation for them. Steve, how important was it to engage with the local residents tonight?
Yeah, essential. I think we want the plans that we've got here to work for everybody, and if they don't work for everybody, it's going to make it life difficult for us in getting granting the permissions we need, and on an ongoing basis working with everybody. So we think we've presented it as a good thing all round. I think that seemed to go down very well. We had great questions, but also of course it's a launch. You know, this is the first time anybody in the public has seen it. We briefed some journalists yesterday. I think there'll be stuff in the press tonight and tomorrow. So, you know, a really exciting milestone for the club, and this is something that, you know, as long as we get the planning permission, will happen in the new year.
What are the top line kind of things that you need to become a Cat 1 academy?
Well, there's a box ticking exercise with facilities, but they're all facilities that, you know, improve the standard of care educationally, from a sports science point of view, mental health point of view for the boys, and also things that help tremendously in developing the talent of the players as footballers. So 3G pitch, indoor pitch, and then things that complement the first team as well. So Deso pitch with undersoil heating, so we don't have to use the stadium when things are frozen. So the main thing for us is to really improve the care and helping the boys grow and develop as people, which will help them improve as footballers and give them a greater chance to succeed. And the facilities that we'll be able to build around this, with schooling, with mentoring, with the sports science and medical, will really make a huge difference, I think, to the players' development. And, of course, help with recruitment, because if we've got the very best of everything, then there's no reason for a local kid to go to any other academy.
Now, you must have looked at a few sites over the years, but is it kind of almost the perfect location because it's right next to the first team training ground, but not in the same place, so they've still got that other location to aspire to get to?
Well, more than that, it will be the only Category 1 elite academy in South London. We know what a barrier the river is to travel, so from a recruitment point of view, it's absolutely essential that we add an inner London site that's well served by transport facilities. You know, there's stations, obviously the road system's pretty good, and that's absolutely essential. And it's very, very difficult, you know, with the pressure we've got on housing in London, it's very difficult to find a 40-acre site like this that people are prepared to either sell you the freehold or make it available to you for, you know, long-term, 75 years at the moment, we hope to extend, so that we can spend the money on developing it. So it's tremendously difficult to find the land, and this piece of land being so close to the first team training ground is absolutely ideal, and we're pleased we could secure it.
Thanks, Steve. Chairman Steve Parish there. And now we hear from a man who has an incredible record against Leicester City. I'll probably talk about that later on in the podcast. It's Wilfried Zaha talking to Premier League Productions.
Wilf, it's great to be here speaking to you today, especially given how well Crystal Palace have started the season. You're sixth in the European spots at the moment. What's the feeling like around the club?
Everyone's happy, really. Obviously, we've had difficult spells. Obviously, the season didn't start the best, but I think we've stuck together, and I think we merited where we are right now. So, yeah, everyone's happy right now.
We saw last season how Palace started, and traditionally you get stronger as the season goes on. What's been behind this good start?
I think we've just told ourselves that we need to just start stronger, really, and try to get the maximum points at the beginning of the season, because we always don't have a great start, then near the end of the season, that's when we pick up points, and then we get around 10th and then we're happy. But I feel like it's just like, why not do our best at the beginning, get the maximum points we can, and then hopefully we can grow into the season as well and see what we can get.
Obviously, Sunday's result against Arsenal, you always seem to cause Arsenal problems, and you in particular. Yeah. You won that penalty in the first half, but I wanted to talk to you about that because, of course, initially, you were booked for diving. What was going through your mind at that moment?
Me, personally, I thought it was a stonewall pen. And I even looked at Chambers. As soon as it happened, he kind of just walked off. So that just told me he knows as well. So I was kind of shocked when a referee booked me and gave me a yellow card, but it was... I just thought to myself, thank God there's VAR, because as soon as I spoke to the ref, I was shocked, but I spoke to him and he said he was looking. They're looking at it, so I thought, no problem. If they are able to look at it, I know this is 100% going to be a penalty. So I was shocked that I got yellow carded, but it was just like, I've got faith that they're going to see that this is a penalty. And then, yeah, it showed that it was.
It's quite funny, isn't it, when they rescind the yellow card?
Yeah,
after.
I know, because it's like, you've booked me everything, you've done everything, and now you've made the wrong decision. But I was just happy we managed to get back into the game, really.
With that decision specifically, you talk about VAR there. Are you pro-VAR? Do you think it's really good for players such as yourself? Because we've seen you get frustrated before when you feel you have been fouled and you've not got what you thought you should get from your referee. So do you now feel better knowing that VAR will help you out?
I'm a bit of in the middle, really, because obviously there's certain goals where you think it's a goal, like Arsenal's third goal where they've celebrated for like I don't know how long. Then it's pulled back and it's not a goal. That's the only thing, like, you never know when a goal is actually a goal nowadays. But for me personally, incidents like that where I have been fouled and the referee hasn't seen, and obviously I'm branded a diver and whatever, and then it gets rescinded, it helps me massively because everyone is able to see that I didn't just dive and there was contact. So, yeah, on that aspect for me, yeah. I think it's good.
You also picked up on a challenge from Guendouzi. You posted about it on your social media account. What was your take on that challenge?
That was... Well, of all the challenges I take for our games, that one was by far just the worst. That was ridiculous. He didn't even get red carded, so I was shocked. Like, there was no attempt to get the ball. He just bundled me over. So, yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. I'm still shocked up to now how he took me out.
Did he say anything to you after?
Yeah, we spoke after. He was just like, bro, I had to do it. And, yeah, to be honest, he's the last man. Like, if I was in his position, I would have probably... Not to the way he took me out, but, yeah, so I understood where he came from.
Looking at your season so far... I was at that game on Sunday. It looked like you were starting to really get back to your best. Do you feel like you're starting to now?
Yeah. Slowly, obviously, I've got my goals that I've set. Obviously, I'm not happy because I haven't scored so far. But I think if I keep on putting in the good performances, the goals will come eventually. So I'm not in no rush to be greedy and try and get goals. I'm just trying to take step by step.
You talk about targets. What are your targets? Will you tell us?
It's just to get double digits goals-wise and get double digits assists, hopefully. Last season, I set myself to get double digits and I managed to get 10 goals. So it's just to score more goals every season. That's the first goal that I try to set myself all the time. So, yeah, that's one of them anyway.
Do you feel any pressure? Because when you talk about Crystal Palace and their star players, everyone immediately thinks of Wilfried Zaha. So do you feel the burden of the rest of the team, or do you thrive on that pressure?
No, I thrive on it, and I feel like I wouldn't be able to do what I do if it wasn't for the team. So it's nice to hear, Wilfried Zaha when you mention Palace, but half the time, if Luca doesn't give me the ball that he gave me on the weekend, I wouldn't be in with the chance to take on the right back. So it's a thing where I appreciate the support that I'm given, but then we're a team and I lose the ball so much. If the midfielders and defenders weren't there to help me out, then I wouldn't do what I do. So it's nice, but I think it's a team thing, man. We are where we are because of the team.
You are always one of the most fouled players in the Premier League. You spoke about VAR there, you spoke about Sunday. What is that like as a player? We saw after the Huddersfield game last season, you got a bit frustrated. How do you deal with that?
I just try to just get on with the game, really. Like, I'm passionate about the game, and when I feel like something's unfair, I feel I have to get my point across. But I try my best to just get on with the game. On Sunday, there was a few things that I didn't agree with, but it's a thing where you just gotta get on with it, really. So that's what I told myself. Things ain't gonna go my way all the time, so just get on with it.
I read somewhere that you saw a life coach as well a couple of years ago, is that right? How did
Not a couple of years ago, not that long ago, actually. Literally, like, last year, okay. Actually. Yeah, just to help me put certain things in perspective and just for me to... Because there was a period where I wasn't loving football the way I used to. And I feel like with the life coach, it helped me put things into perspective and it helped me quite a bit to motivate me for when I go out for games as well.
Does it help you in those situations where you get fouled and stuff? Have they taught you anything about channeling the anger or frustration?
Yeah, definitely. Because it's like, that's the thing, just... telling myself that things ain't gonna go my way and then channeling it in a way where put that aggression into how I'm gonna play instead of being angry about it, because that's not gonna do nothing for me. So just playing, getting up, going again.
You are only 26, but it does feel like we've been talking about you and watching you on the pitch for so long now. But also talking to you, it feels like you're a little bit more mature in the way you view your football now. Like you've learned a lot from your life on the pitch so far.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like you can only gain experience from playing. So I feel like I've been here forever. But playing games and just learning every game. So I'm learning my trade. I'm learning what I'm good at, what I'm not good at, and what I need to improve on. So yeah, definitely maturing as I play.
You say you're maturing, but is the best still to come? 26, you're arguably in your prime now.
No, I feel like the best is still to come. There's a few things that I need to tweak in my game, and there'll be definitely the best of Wolford soon.
A few things you need to tweak. Can you enlighten us?
I think there's a few, like, certain decision making in certain aspects of my game and just my finishing. Mm-hmm. Those are the two things I feel like if I'm able to do that right, I'll peak properly.
You're clearly very, very focused on your football. You know what you want to achieve.
Yeah.
How do you escape coming away from the pitch? Because football is such a huge part of your life, but equally escaping is just as important.
Yeah, it's massive. Obviously, my son Leo makes a massive difference to my life because obviously I'm the same guy to, I'm just dad to him on and off the pitch really. So that just gets me away from everything because when I get away from here, when I get away from the pitch, we just speak about everything else apart from football. Like it's just random conversations and he just takes me away from just everything else I have to deal with really. And it's nice.
Does he know Daddy's a footballer or is he still a little bit too young?
I think he does know I'm a footballer because when he sees me on the screen or whatever, he's like, oh, Daddy, football. So yeah, he does know. And he likes playing football as well. So I think he knows what I do and he enjoys it as well. So it makes me even happier.
South London's it's a hotbed of footballing talent. You've said your little boy's already...
Yeah.
Got a knowledge of football. Do you think he could potentially follow in his dad's footsteps?
No, to be honest, I think he could. I hope so, to be honest. He already plays around with me, always wants to play football. Like his first words were, where's the ball? Imagine that. So yeah, it was crazy, man. But yeah, he's left-footed and he wants to play quite a bit with me, like kicking about in the garden. So hopefully, fingers crossed, he follows the same path.
When he asked where the ball was, you did give it to him, didn't you?
Yeah. He can have the ball whenever he wants.
As well, family clearly is so important to you. And your dad as well, you're incredibly close to him. He watches all the games back, doesn't he?
Yeah.
What's your relationship like with him?
My dad's my biggest critique, really. Like, after games, even before games, like, before, when he used to get annoyed, every time before I go out, even if it's just... like away games, he'll come to speak to me and he'll be like, don't get angry, stuff like that. And just like, no problem, Dad. And then after games, we'll speak about what I should have done there, what I did well there. And yeah, we'll just go through the whole game really. And it's just nice to sit down with my dad and just do stuff. Like we've done it for years really. So it's just something that's normal to me.
So you've got the whole world watching you, but one of the biggest opinions that matters to you is your dad.
Yeah, definitely, because he's been watching me from Sunday League. Mm. He used to take me all the time. And then now I've managed to reach where I have and then he's still there to to give me advice, and obviously his advice has worked out this well, so yeah, I'm always going to listen to him.
To be fair, I think you're doing the right thing listening to him. You haven't done bad so far.
Yeah.
You are one of nine, I believe.
Yeah.
What was growing up in a house like that like? It must have been crazy.
You get no privacy whatsoever at all, but yeah, it was nice, man. It was just like, always had someone around to do whatever, really play, do whatever. So it was nice. It was a nice environment, playful environment, and I enjoyed it.
Did you play football with your brothers?
Yeah,
your sisters, maybe?
All the time. All the time. We used to destroy the back garden, like the fencing and stuff. My dad used to get so angry, but yeah, it was fun having people to play. Even when we went to the park, we didn't even need to wait for people to make teams. We just go and just play between ourselves. So yeah, it was enjoyable.
You, of course, came over here when you were 4 years old, originally from the Ivory Coast. You now play for their national team.
Yeah.
How important is it to you to still connect to those roots, and how much do you enjoy going away with them?
It's massive, especially it's massive for me and it's massive for my family, because me going back, the love and support that I get from the country is unreal. And it was like before, I barely even did anything, but the support that they gave me was ridiculous, it just pushed me more to want to play for them. And for my family, they just find it's an honor for them, like having their little brother or their, my mum, my dad, their child playing for the national team. And obviously my mum loves it, because over there she's just like, yeah, Wolf, it's ours, my son and stuff. So yeah, I'm happy I could make them happy, really. And it's just I find it amazing being able to play for my country, really going out there and playing for the colours.
From the Ivory Coast to Croydon, of course.
Yeah.
South London's pretty special to you as well. We've seen you here today at a community event speaking to youngsters. How important is it to you to give back to this area as well?
It's massive, because obviously there's so much other stuff that goes on in the area, and then seeing the community things that are being put out now to help the young kids. That, to be honest, there wasn't so much of these things when I was growing up. There was kicks, obviously, but there weren't so much of these things. But now seeing money being put into the community and me being able to get where I've got to, and if I have an opportunity to help, I'm 100% going to help, because I grew up here. I grew up literally next to Selhurst. And if there's an opportunity for me to go and have a little kick about with my friends and it's free, then why not do it? And if I can help other kids instead of hanging around in the streets and stuff and just doing unnecessary stuff, to go to something like kicks where it's like a pound and you can play with your friends, it just makes so much sense to me.
You use the word help there a lot, and it isn't just the local people in Croydon that you help. Charity is a big part of your life, and you give a lot to charity. Why is that so important to you?
Because obviously I know what it feels like to have nothing, really. Like, I remember days where I used to go to training and I didn't have boots, stuff like that. So it's like I've managed to get to where I've got to, and if I have the opportunity to help other people, I'm always going to do it. It's like my sister has an orphanage, but this comes under the umbrella of my foundation. Mm-hmm. She has an orphanage called Tomorrow's Hope. And she takes care of so many children over there. And it's a joy when she sends me the videos of the kids happy, smiling. So yeah, to me, it's a given, me being able to just give back to everyone, really, and help people that have nothing. I appreciate that I can help them, really.
We've talked about charity, we've talked about football, we've talked about family. There's so many different sides to Wilfried Zaha that we don't necessarily see on the pitch. But we're starting to see it a little bit more in interviews and on social media. Has that helped you show people the real Wilf?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, people will just see, they'll just see us rock up on a pitch at 3 p.m. and play. But obviously, there's me personally, there's more to me. Like, and I don't like to throw it in people's faces, because that's not what I do it for. I don't. Half of the time you see on social media, people give money to poor people or less fortunate people and record it at the same time. And it's just like, you're not exactly doing it from the heart then, are you? Mm-hmm. So I just feel like I'll do what I can do to give back to the community, to give back to my country. But I appreciate the accolades that I'm getting now, but it's not, I don't do it for that. So it's nice for me to be able to get out my personality for people to understand the kind of person I am, and not just see me as the angry guy on the football pitch, really. So yeah, it's nice.
And you're smiling as well. We get to see you
smile today. Yeah, yeah. It's not often that I smile, but yeah, I do smile quite often.
Yeah, that's good. It's good to see you smiling. Unfortunately, from the good side of social media, there is also a really bad, ugly side, which you've seen firsthand.
Yeah.
The racism that we see on social media, and we've seen recently on the pitch as well, it's been awful, and the fact we're having to talk about it now is awful. What's your take on what's going on at the moment and the way the authorities are dealing with it?
I don't even know what to say on it anymore, to be honest, because I don't know, like, it's like the more we speak about it, the more it happens now. Like, I don't know if people do it to get spoken about. I don't know, like, on social media is the biggest one, really, because anyone will make a fake account and call you whatever on the fake account, and then they'll just delete it, make another one. So it's like, I don't even know how to handle it anymore. Like, I just tend to just get on with it. I just think if that's all you can really say to me, then you ain't really educated. If that's the only response you can give me, especially if we're playing a game like football that everyone loves, and that's what you're coming back to me with. Mm. So I just tend to keep my head down and just get on with it, really. Like, those people that do that, I don't know how the media and the police are going to take care of it, but there needs to be something. I feel like there needs to be a proper sanction to scare people off from doing it. Because it's like, someone will do it this week, and then because it's mentioned in the media, it's like other people will see and think, you know what, I want my name out there as well, and then be racist as well. It's literally what it looks like. Like, someone will do it there, and then other people think it's cool, so they'll do it somewhere else. That's what it seems like. It's like a chain reaction all the time now. So I don't really have an answer for it, really. Me personally, I just pay no attention to it anymore.
Let's talk football. Let's turn it back to the weekend's game, shall we? Leicester. They won 9-0 last weekend, as you know.
Yeah.
I always wonder how much... I know every footballer is different. Some footballers watch a lot of other teams in their spare time. Leicester kicked off last weekend's football by winning 9-0 at Southampton. Were you watching that game?
Yeah, I was actually out, and then I switched on... When I got back home, I switched it on and I saw 7-0, and I was thinking, is this now? This can't be. But yeah, that game was ridiculous. 9-0. They started the season incredibly. But football games are crazy games. So someone can win 9-0, then lose the next week, then draw the next week. So you never know what happens. So I don't tend to be scared by other teams at all. Like, what will happen on Sunday will happen. And I feel like we've had a good record against Leicester over the years we've played them, so I'm looking forward to it.
It's obviously a top six battle.
Yeah.
The way Palace are at the moment, the way you approached the Arsenal game and the way you've approached games earlier this season already, do you fear anyone at the moment?
No, I don't think we should fear anyone in general, really. I feel like we just got to do what we need to do. Obviously, look at teams and understand how they play, how we can hurt them, and just go into the game fearless and hopefully get a result.
Brendan Rodgers has rightfully had a lot of praise this season, but your manager, Roy Hodgson, what's he like? Because the job he's on, he's almost quietly gone about his business here.
Yeah, he doesn't really bother about pats on the back or anything. He just does what he does, really. I feel like the information they give us about teams is very precise. So when we go on the pitch, we know what we're doing. And he's very precise with the stuff he wants. And obviously, it's worked out. You can see from where we are in the league that he knows exactly what he's doing. So, yeah, hopefully on Sunday, it's exactly the same as it's been over the years against Leicester. Hopefully we can get a win, but we'll see.
Wilfried Zaha there, talking to Premier League Productions. There's no Statman this week. Unfortunately, he's so posh, he's gone to Tokyo to watch the Rugby World Cup final. But Dan Blundell, who we had on a pod last year, used to work for the club, he sent in some statistics to me. So I'm going to read through some of those. I'll read through some of the Opta ones, but obviously we won't have the usual hilarious banter that I have with Statman. So let's have a look. The big one from Dan. Record against Leicester, better than any other team currently in the Premier League. In 14 games, we scored 23 and conceded just 12 goals against Leicester City. That's a goal difference of plus 11, for those of you that can't do mathematics. We've only scored more goals in the Premier League against one other team than Leicester, and that is Liverpool. We've scored 27 goals in 20 games against Liverpool, which is an average of 1.35 goals per game. And Leicester, we've got 23 against them in 14, which is an average of 1.64 goals per game. So the goals per game is higher than the Liverpool one. But wow, we've scored so many goals against Liverpool. He wanted to give a special mention to James McArthur because he called him out last season as being the unsung hero because his stats were so good and he feels like he's having an amazing season again. He's asked if I could look up some stats, but I never got around to doing that. I've had a busy week. Okay, Opta. We've won our last four Premier League meetings with Leicester by an aggregate score of 13-1 in a top flight history. We've only ever won five in a row against Wimbledon. That was between 1989 and 1991. They would have been at Plough Lane, wouldn't they? That was before Selhurst. I was thinking maybe they would have all been at Sellers Park, but no. Know your place, Christopher. Don't start thinking you're stat man. Leicester have lost four of their seven Premier League away games against Palace, failing to score in each defeat. However, they've never lost away at Palace in the competition when they found the net. They've won two and drawn one of those. I don't like that one. I haven't got stat man's like red highlighter for bad and green for good. This is not good. This will be Crystal Palace's fourth Premier League game in a row against a side starting in the top five of the table. The first side to have done so since Wolves in November 2010. Wow, that's impressive. I think. It's not really. It's just chance, isn't it? Leicester's last away game saw them record the biggest away win in English top flight history, 9-0. However, the Foxes have won just one of their last 14 Premier League games in London, drawn six and lost seven. Palace haven't lost back-to-back Premier League home games since March. Move on from that one. Wilfried Zaha scored in each of his last three Premier League games against Leicester. He scored four goals in total against the Foxes, more than he has versus any other side in the Premier League. He also got one in the Championship on his very first game starting for Crystal Palace back in 2010. I think in total he's got five goals and three assists against them. There's more stats, but having started doing this, I realise I'm not very good at it. So we're going to go back to an interview. The other week, I caught up with Kira Watling and Jordan Butler at the Junior Member Day to find out how the Palace women had got on at the start of the season. This was before they won again. They actually won the game last weekend. So they're actually in an even better position than I said they were in the interview.
Right. Good afternoon. First of all, the penalty shootout that we did today. It was what was your thinking on how you both did?
I just wanted to boost the kids' confidence. Yeah. So I thought if I put it wide, because Max, who was on my team, missed. Yeah. So I thought I'd take one for the team and put it wide.
Jordan?
To be honest, I just wanted it to go to sudden death. The kids get another penalty.
Yeah.
And also, I sort of felt a bit bad for Kira after that shocking penalty that she took. So I thought, I can't let everyone think that Kira's worse than me. So I just put it in the same spot that Kira did. It was accurate. It worked.
No, I've never really chatted to you guys about what you both do away from football, job-wise. Because you're always available for these events. So what do you do?
I run my own business. So coaching business, coaching academy. So I have a girl academy. 16 to 18 years old, and then we coach kids from 3 years old to 20.
What about you, Jordan?
I'm an executive assistant to a vice president of a facilities company in town.
Fancy.
So it's a bit of a mouthful, really, isn't it? But yeah, just work in London, normal Monday to Friday job.
How do you fit around football? I suppose your training's in the evenings, isn't it, for those that don't know?
Yeah, so we train Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, for 2 hours each night. So I normally commute home, quickly get changed, get in the car and go straight to training.
Kira, you've obviously been with the club before we were in the Championship. How have things changed?
We train more often now, so we have another extra session. The quality of players, it's a lot higher. It's really intense, the training, really, really competitive. We've got so many players in each position and the games that we're playing are a lot better and really challenging. Whereas I think previously, we kind of always guarantee that we were going to win.
Yeah, this season, how's this season gone? 5 points so far.
yeah, it's really positive, I think. We're improving every week, which is the main thing, and definitely getting better. So I think it's going to be a good season.
John, what has changed over the summer at Palace, other than new faces?
I just think the coaching style is slightly different. I think last year was obviously new to the Championship. It was a new setup for quite a few of the girls and obviously the management as well. So I think this year we've obviously got a year's experience. The coaches have changed that. Like Kira said, we've got some new players. It's just a different setup.
How's the atmosphere been down there at Hayes Lane?
Really good. Yeah, we really got a good bond, a lot of banter. I think it's really good. Like, training's competitive and it's just a good atmosphere and everyone's got the same goal that we want to do well and win games.
And crowd-wise, do you tend to get more people coming down on the weekends when the men's team aren't playing or like during the international breaks? Does it make any difference, do you notice?
Last season, we had loads of fans. I don't know, at the minute, there's not been a lot, but I'm not sure if, I don't know, the men's game been clashing with our games, but we had more last season.
Yeah. We had quite a few on the weekend, but we played Chelsea in the Cup, so I think it was obviously quite a big game and a lot of the Chelsea fans travelled down. But like Kira said, I think quite a few of our games have clashed, or Palace have had like a long away trip at the same time that we've had our game. So we haven't seen that many Palace fans, so it'd be great if a few more could come down and cheer us on. Yeah,
that'd be nice. I think the Lewis game, we're planning on doing a big
last
old
season
thing from the club. Yeah, to get people down, so that should be good, shouldn't it? How much of a difference does it make?
I think it's so much better. Do you know, when you just hear all the fans, like last season, they had little chants going for every player and it just makes a really good atmosphere. And then I think more people come back when they see more people there and it's really good.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Always lovely talking to Kira and Jordan. Finally, let's hear from the legend himself, Mr. Roy Hodgson.
Afternoon, Roy. Can I start with a bit of injury news, please, if there's any?
Well, I think we may have lost Andros Townsend, which is a blow. He felt a muscle strain in the game against Arsenal. He hasn't trained before today, but he was desperate to try and see how it went. But he didn't complete the session. So we'll see tomorrow, of course, as another day. But I'll be surprised if he makes it. But the good news was, of course, that Great has trained all week, and even Mamadou Sakho and Conor Wickham took part in at least the early part of our session today, not the more intensive part. So we're really quite blessed with not having many injuries, although it is a blow to lose Andros.
You mentioned Guaita there. Where do you stand as regards your goalkeeping position at the moment? Because Hennessy's done very well in the two games, and I imagine you're not the sort of guy who would want to change for the sake of it.
Well, the fact is, it's competition for places between those two. It has been all along. Certainly, Guaita was the number one goalkeeper for a period of time. But when Wayne came back in, he's done well in the two games. So it will be really the usual sort of pleasant headache that you have, that whichever goalkeeper I choose, I have great confidence in. But I will have to make a choice.
What did you make of Leicester's performance at Southampton last Friday, and how different is it for an opposition coach to prepare to play against a team like that when you know their confidence is sky high, having scored a higher number of goals than normal in a game?
I think we'd have been sort of preparing for a very good team and a very good team performance, irrespective of the Southampton game. Obviously, that sort of adds even more spice to the affair, especially as far as Leicester are concerned, because they're coming here on the back of two good results, because they won away in the week in the Carabao Cup. But that type of victory lives long in the memory, and I'm certain, as you say, really does add to the confidence. But it can't affect anything as far as we're concerned. We were preparing anyway to meet a Leicester team with many good players, obviously in excellent form. So we'll just have to hope that they don't do to us what they did to Southampton.
From what you've seen of them, are they possibly even better than the side that won the Premier League 3 years ago? Do you think they're capable of sustaining a title challenge this season?
I wouldn't compare, because I don't think that's the right thing to do. And it was an incredible achievement, and that was always going to be a historic achievement as well. So I wouldn't want to compare. But if the question is, could this team do the same? I would say most definitely, with what they're showing at the moment, albeit they're going to face tough competition this year with Liverpool in such good form and Man City, of course, the current champions, trying to catch up with them.
Jamie Vardy looks better than ever at the age of 32. As somebody brought him into the England squad, as you did a few years ago, is he somebody who possibly is now benefiting from not having the burden, if you like, of international football and the extra demands and the pressure that that can bring? Is he playing with a little bit of freedom, possibly? And it's helping his game at his age?
I'm not sure, to be honest, you know, with, you know, from what I know of working with Jamie, that the England thing would have been a burden for him. I mean, he's obviously chosen to take himself out of the frame, but that could well be more to do with his, you know, changed circumstances with his marriage, and obviously maybe feeling I'm getting a little bit older and I'm no longer necessarily going to be first choice and I prefer maybe to step aside. I don't know, that's what I read at the time. I wouldn't have thought it would be difficult for him had he wanted to continue. I don't think it would have been a burden, and basically speaking, he's every bit as good, probably even better, because he's got more games under his belt and even more Champions League and national games under his belt than he was when we selected him. But he was very good at that time, very, very dangerous, and he's every bit as dangerous, if not more so, today. I have great respect for him, and obviously we'll be treating him with the respect that his performances deserve.
Can I ask you about your reaction to the punishment handed down by UEFA to the Bulgarian FA this week? It was, as you know, £65,000, two games played behind closed doors, one of those suspended for 2 years. Lots of people within the game have reacted and said it was a bit too lenient. Can I ask your view?
Well, it is lenient, there's no doubt about that. But I think the problem goes wider than any fines, really, and any stadium closure. It's a problem which no amount, really, of money that you fine people or however many games you force them to play behind closed doors is going to make go away. It's something that the Bulgarian FA are very much in the spotlight with it, and I can quite understand people questioning the leniency, but I think the most important thing is that people don't ever stop questioning the importance of putting an end to this racism, wherever it shows its ugly face. And it's a subject which, every time something like this happens, gets more news coverage, and that for me is a very positive thing. So I don't think the actual amount of the fine is the important factor. It's the fact that racism exists, and we've got to do everything we can in football to get rid of it.
Stories around yesterday, late last night, I think that you're in talks to extend your stay here at Crystal Palace. Could you just bring us up to date on whether that's the case?
Well, Steve and I talk all the time, and, you know, sometimes these things get mooted, so of course, you know, I suppose it's fair to say, yeah, that we're in talks, but I can't give you anything more than that.
You've been here just over 2 years now, and it seems surprising, but that puts you, I think, ninth on the list of longest-serving Premier League managers. To you, it's a sign of the times, isn't it? But do you see your future being here?
Yes, I mean, absolutely. If I'm to stay in football, then I see my future certainly being here. There's no question of that. I enjoy it very much here. I've been very happy in these 2 years. And it's really just a question of, you know, in discussions with Steve, making certain that they're as happy with me as I am to be at the club.
Your chairman said yesterday that he wants this club to compete at the very top end of the table going forward. Were you surprised, given that in the last three windows you've actually spent quite modestly?
Yeah, but that doesn't stop us maybe improving on that going forward. It's been special circumstances during these 2 years, and I certainly would never wish to counteract anyone's ambitions for their football club. I think it would be more disappointing for Crystal Palace and Crystal Palace fans if Steve Parish as chairman and the owners were going out saying we don't have an ambition to become better, we don't want to do what we see Leicester doing this year, for example, you know, really making life extremely uncomfortable for the so-called top six. So I applaud the thought, I applaud the ambition, but of course for us to get there, our fans would need to know that, you know, Steve has got a longer-term plan for that, and it's not something we can make happen overnight, because I'm not even certain it would be the right thing for suddenly hundreds of millions of pounds to be thrown into the the football team and we start all over again with a totally different group of players. It's a question of adding the right players at the right moment in time and building on what we've been trying to do over the last few years.
Hi Roy, is there any element of fear in facing a team that's just won 9-0 away from home?
No, I think you fear more if you're confronted with a tiger in the jungle. I think that's what real fear is. I don't know that the word fear is the right word to use when it comes to football matches, to be perfectly honest. We have a lot of respect for Leicester City. We're perfectly aware that they're capable of beating us, you know, and that's not something we want to happen. And we know that they've got that ability to do it, so we're concerned about that. But at least we've got it in our hands to try and do something about it. And I wouldn't want to use the word fear. I think that would suggest that we don't have any faith in ourselves and that we think that we're being confronted with an opponent that we can't possibly beat, and that definitely is not the case.
Well, you've actually got quite a good record against them, haven't you? You're unbeaten in five. But are they sort of, is it a different proposition now under Brendan Rodgers, and how impressed are you with the job he's done in such a short period of time?
He's done a good job, there's no question of that, but I mean a lot of these players have been bought in over a period of time as well. The club has, I think, been heading towards this situation they find themselves in now for a period of time, because, you know, several of the players that have been bought into the club were actually there, you know, the Chilwells of the world, and these people, they've been the Harvey Barneses, the Chowderys, all these young players who've done so well for them. They've been at the club a period of time and have been well introduced by Brendan and even before him, Claude Puel. So I think the club has been building up to this situation, but of course they've employed a very experienced and very good manager who's obviously getting the very best out of the players as well. So it's a very nice marriage for them at the moment. They have a nice balance between youth and experience. The young players they've brought in are all playing exceptionally well. And in the background, they're still lucky enough to have the backbone, if you like, with the goalkeeper, Schmeichel, with Evans, with Ndidi and Vardy. That's a very good backbone of the team. And all of those, of course, have been doing it for a period of time now.
In the past two away games, you've come from behind. Are you proud and happy with how the character they show and how well they respond going behind?
I'd rather not come from behind, if it's possible. It's nice if you're in the lead. It's because in the Premier League, you know, the statistics of the first goal being decisive in terms of deciding the points, it's quite an impressive statistic, and we're aware of it. But it is important, you know. You can't always take the lead. You do find yourself going behind, and that's when you want your team to show the resilience, but also the belief that, you know, this game is not going to finish until the referee blows the final whistle. And all the time, you know, we're just one goal behind, we can always get back in it and get ourselves a result. And that's something we've shown, you know, consistently, I think, during the couple of years that I've been working with the team, and no more so than on last Sunday.
Thank you.
Hello, Roy. Sorry. Hi, I'm back to that 9-0 scoreline. I just wondered, have you been on either side of a scoreline of that size as a manager or a player, and how does it affect a coach or a player going forward?
I would really need preparation time for these things. Don't forget, you know, I've got about 1,500 games, and I mean, it's a bit difficult. I'm always frightened of saying, yes, I was, or no, I wasn't, and then someone coming back to me and coming up with a statistic I've completely forgotten about. I don't remember many 9-0s, and if they existed, it would have been at Malmö, who had that capacity, but not in a league game. I think the biggest league game result I can remember was about 7-0. I can definitely say I've not actually been on the receiving end of 9-0, and I feel very sorry for people that are on the receiving end of that, especially at the highest level of football, like we're playing at now. The other night, whilst I was admiring, of course, Leicester's play, and, you know, like all football lovers, respecting and taking a lot of enjoyment even from the quality of their football, at the same time, you can't help but think about the person who got to stand in front of the cameras after the game. It's pretty easy to stand in front of the cameras when you've won 9-0 and very difficult to stand when you've lost 9-0. And on that subject, I thought Hasan Hoogla was fantastic after the game, the way he handled what I thought was a very difficult interview. But the bottom line is that there are teams in the Premier League now, and Leicester are proving to be one of them, who on a good day, when their football's working and their top players, who really are top players, are in excellent form, you know, the risk, I'm afraid, of getting beaten heavily is always there. And let's not forget, too, that Leicester didn't beat a team with 11 men 9-0. They did beat a team with 10 men 9-0. And I'm pretty convinced that the scoreline wouldn't have reached 9 had Bertrand not been sent off just before the first goal was scored. So all those things, for me now, they're historic moments, if you like. It was a really good Friday night's entertainment if you were a Southampton supporter and a neutral watching the game, of course. But I'm pretty sure that Brendan Rodgers has told his players to forget all about that. This is a different game altogether, and we're going into it as a different game altogether, and we won't be even mentioning the 9-0 scoreline. Everyone else will, but we won't be doing it.
You say that you and Steve Parish are in conversations about possibly a new deal for you. I wondered if you ever thought you would still be a Premier League manager at the age of 73, and if there's any such thing as being too old to be a top-flight manager.
Well, I just read today or heard today that Donald Trump, who's a little bit older than I am, is planning to stay on as President of the United States for the next 5 years. And, you know, with respect, this is an important job I have here, but it's not quite as important as being the leader of the free world. So I must say I don't wake up every morning thinking how old I am. Occasionally I get questions like that, and I cannot deny it. But I can also deny that I don't actually feel 72. That's the problem, you know, and that no one is going to make me feel 72 or make me feel that I'm too old. The day may come when I feel that way, but it certainly hasn't happened yet. And I must say, looking into the future and into a crystal ball, I don't know when that's going to happen.
There's going to be quite a big other sporting event happening over the weekend. I wonder if you're a big rugby fan and if you're going to, as a team, watch it together, or will you be able to watch the Rugby World Cup?
Well, we're training, so we won't be watching it. That's the first thing. Secondly, I've had very good relationships with first Stuart Lancaster and now Eddie Jones, so I have a lot of respect for them as the coaches and the work they do. But I'm more interested in the game through their leadership and through my discussions with them and how they run their sports team, because, you know, football and rugby have got a lot of similarities in terms of looking after a group of players. If you ask me if I'm a big fan of rugby, then of course I have to answer no, because, you know, you've only got to look at me, and if you'd have seen me, you know, maybe when I was at school or when I was just starting to play football, you know, only the most idiotic of people could have suggested I could play rugby. You know, to play rugby you have to be a certain size. And as a result, of course, it's most of the games I've really taken a serious interest in are games I felt I had some chance of playing. And rugby and basketball disappeared for me very, very early on.
Roy, you mentioned you couldn't watch the rugby, but do you have a message for Eddie Jones and his team?
I sent him a text anyway, and the message, of course, will be a massive well done. Fantastic, congratulations. I think whatever happens in the final, they've acquitted themselves quite brilliantly. You know, the win against New Zealand, the All Blacks, that in itself is something they're going to remember and dine out on for many, many years to come. I only hope now they can bring home the glittering prize. But whatever happens, I think that they've done more than enough for the country and certainly more than enough for their sport, you know, so there's no doubt that. And I enjoy watching it, you know, much more now than I perhaps have done years in the past anyway, but I still, unfortunately, will never get the real enjoyment of the game, which comes from you having understood it completely and played in it. But I wish Eddie all the best. I wish the team all the best, Owen Fowler and everyone there. And of course, as soon as we can, we'll be getting a glimpse of the TV screen, as long as it doesn't interfere with our training session.